This is WMUK's Let's Hear It, Music of the Moment in West Michigan. I'm Kara Lawrence. My guest this hour comes by his mixed pedigree of classical and jazz influences honestly. The son of Western Michigan University professor of violin, Renata Knifick, and the chair of the jazz studies department, Tom Knifick, this eclectic young composer and pianist and his trio were invited to perform for the Fontana Summer Festival this weekend. I am delighted to welcome Gene Knifick to WMUK. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Gene, you grew up in Kalamazoo, of course, and we're going to be talking a little bit about your Kalamazoo background and your two relatively famous parents here. But I wanted to congratulate you on what basically is your professional debut on Sunday, July 13th in Bronson Park in a concert presented by Fontana Chamber Arts and the Arts Council of Greater Kalamazoo. I think it couldn't be a better debut back here in West Michigan.
Thank you. I totally agree. I'm so excited to be playing in Bronson Park. And I'm really, really excited that I'll be playing with my group that I've been developing this repertoire with for the last year or so down in Miami. So this feels like a really great welcome home. And I'm so excited to bring this music back to Kalamazoo.
You could say you had a bit of a head start with having two parents who are professional musicians and educators. But, you know, we all find our way through music with our own special path. And just before we went on, I was talking about albums I knew from my parents' collection and kind of obsessed over. And did you have a similar experience, tunes that caught you and that started your musical imagination going?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I would probably say my very first memory is my dad introducing me to the Beatles, and that's, you know, kind of got me excited in elementary school. And then when I started kind of getting into piano and jazz and practicing, my dad had introduced my brother to the great pianist Chick Corea, and a whole, you know, slew of records from his, you know, fusion records in the 70s to with Return to Forever. And Now He Sings, Now He Sobs, which is a great album from the late 60s. And I kind of, you know, I was watching my brother learn this stuff because he's a pianist as well. And I got really interested in that and kind of delved into that music myself. And then really got hooked on Chick Corea, and that kind of led to another group, which led to another group, and suddenly I was building my own collection.
Isn't there didn't something in the music industry change at that time? There's like this openness and freedom and this stretching of forms and 8-minute tunes, and it's kind of a good era to be hooked on.
Yeah, I agree. For me, you start kind of learning jazz. It's a lot of times taught starting with the bebop era, starting with music of the 40s. And that kind of era didn't really catch my ear till later. What caught my ear was this high energy fusion music that wasn't necessarily totally from the jazz tradition, but linked to it. But part of so many other things. It was part of, you know, it was connected to Latin music and rock and roll and some chamber music. And that's what caught my ear originally and eventually pulled me towards the jazz direction, and I started studying that way. But I guess I've never thought of it that way, but that's must be a big reason why, you know, I study and listen to lots of different music, because it was, you know, that time period was so fruitful for exploring and making connections between different genres and things like that.
Were you pressured to practice, perform, take lessons?
Not at all. My parents have never been pressuring with music. They've only been super resourceful. And they're incredible resources, because my dad is a jazz bass player who also performs classically quite a bit. My mom's a wonderful, wonderful classical violinist. So I learned about harmony, and I got these jazz records and learned a lot of things from my dad about improvisation. It actually wasn't until later, though, I started getting interested in composing chamber music when I went to college, and my mom has performed all the great composers, you know, chamber works and orchestral works. And so she said, you know, you got to listen to this, this, and this if you want to, you know about this. So it's never been about, you know, make sure you practice or, you know, you don't get dessert or something like that. It's always just been, you know, they have these resources and they're very inspiring people to begin with. So I've been extremely lucky.
And self-directed.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
But we have to credit your piano teacher because neither Tom nor Renata plays piano.
That's right. I had a lot of great teachers in Kalamazoo that started me off. My parents connected me with Jeff Mitchell, who's a wonderful teacher and actually right now he started the Kalamazoo Academy of Rock, which is incredible. He puts together a couple rock bands all with kids.
Their shows are so fun.
Yeah, and all the kids are, you know, so talented, and he really brings the best out of them. And so he you know, really brought the best out of me at a really, you know, young, vital age. Later, I studied with Rich Ridenour for a couple years, who's wonderful. And then Lori Sims took me on, who's on faculty at Western Michigan University, and she's really, really pushed me because I started taking lessons with her at a time when I was very serious about music and prepping for college auditions. And I told her I wanted to do music as a career and I would be applying to colleges. So 2 years before my audition day, she gave me this incredibly challenging piece. And I spent the next like year and a half getting through it. And because of that challenge, it really pushed me to be able to, you know, land some of these auditions at schools. And so I'm really thankful for her help.
She's certainly in a position to know exactly what you need in terms of work, mm-hmm. discipline. And that's a very special time when your body can learn a lot of what it needs that it'll use the rest of its life.
Yeah.
As she came along at just the right time.
Yeah, definitely. I also studied with Julian Tay, who's wonderful at Western.
Fantastic pianist.
Yeah, and last but not least, out of Ann Arbor was Tad Weed, who's a wonderful jazz pianist. He's played quite a bit with the Western Jazz Quartet, and is, you know, he's an abundant resource. He has stacks and stacks of transcriptions and tons of records, and just, you know, I'd come to a lesson and he'd give me just a pile of like notes and pieces and transcriptions, and I would go home and frantically, you know, go through the whole thing. And so I had a lot of great support and teachers from Michigan. And also I was lucky enough to take some classes at Western Michigan University when I was in high school. I actually completed most of the jazz program when I was in high school. I got really hooked on it and started taking class after class. So I really have to thank the entire jazz faculty at Western because I took classes with Scott Cowan and Trent Kinniston when he was here, and it was really, really helpful. I even took classes with my dad, which was a really interesting experience, but still wonderful. Yeah.
Well, obviously the network around you is fantastic.
Yeah.
You did the work, but you have to, you know, kind of discover your own voice. And your songwriting has flourished since you've gone to college in Miami, right?
Yeah. When I went to Miami, it's actually kind of an interesting story. I was dealing with some tendonitis issues when I went to Miami. It came from you know, stresses from competition and from ways I was playing the piano wrong, which I eventually, you know, learned how to approach the instrument healthier, and I'm thankful for that. But because I wasn't able to practice as many hours a day as I wanted, I was already a little bit interested in composition, I started really, really studying and taking classes and taking lessons with the composition faculty at University of Miami. You know, I started viewing writing for jazz groups as not just writing tunes, but composing, taking composition elements, motive development, theme, you know, harmony, and viewing it in a more structured way rather than saying, here's chords and a melody, and then we improvise on it. You know, I started getting really interested in seeing, you know, what else is there? You know, how far can I dig? So as far as writing for jazz groups, it's been really nice to explore different avenues.
I can see that you're also, based on the tune list we have in front of us, you're a sucker for some through-composed, profound pieces in the classical genre.
Yeah, well, I've always studied classical music. I'm would never be a touring classical pianist. That's out the window for me now. But I love studying and performing the music, and because you know I'm not playing classical recitals, my way of being able to perform this music is by putting it in a jazz setting. So I've been in this process of taking pieces that I love to perform that don't have a lead sheet, learning them and bringing them to my group and saying like how can we make this work, or you know, coming with ideas myself and say this is how it's going to work, you know.
Okay, we will get more in depth on that a little bit later, but I want to remind listeners that Gene Kniffic and your trio is live in Bronson Park this Sunday at 4:00, a presentation of Fontana Summer Festival and the Arts Council of Greater Kalamazoo. And I think we should give you a break here and listen to some music you brought along. I'd like to start off with one of the tunes you wrote yourself, an original called If I Could Find You.
Wonderful.
That's If I Could Find You by Gene Kniffic. And here in the studio, if you just tuned in, Gene Kniffic is sitting across the table from me, and the Gene Kniffic Trio will play Sunday afternoon at 4:00 in Bronson Park as part of the Fontana Summer Festival, also presented by the Arts Council of Greater Kalamazoo. So Gene, I appreciate that tune and its playing for sheer beauty. It is a tune you kind of fall into and relax and just feel how gorgeous it is. Is this what you would call a ballad?
It's sort of a ballad. It starts as a ballad and then gets exciting and then turns back into a ballad and then gets exciting. It's kind of got this weird, impatience maybe, or fluidity maybe would be a better word to use. Relatively cliche, but I wrote this tune after a breakup midway through college. It was, you know, a long-term relationship, and I was really kind of broken up about it. I included musical elements that tried to mirror what I was feeling at the time. This kind of fluidity and thinness, but also feeling emotional and very, very kind of introverted was the thing with bouts of frustration and, you know, excitement and different things, because it was a, you know, a transitional period in my life, as most you know, long-term breakups are. So there's, you know, the meter changes almost every measure, so it sounds kind of washy in some senses, but then it will come together in unison with a aggressive bass line and this flow thing. But finally, for the solo section, we get this repeated thing, that ostinato that happens, that that I improvise over. So there's kind of these layers of fluidity and structure that kind of represent, you know, what I was thinking at the time.
Whole maelstrom of
emotions.
Yeah. If so, you wrote a tune. It reminds you of a painful time.
Yeah.
Why do you play it if you have to go live in the past?
Well, I mean, if you talk to songwriters, and I'm not a songwriter, but I know a lot of wonderful songwriters, and
we're talking with lyrics.
Yeah, with lyrics. This is where the inspiration comes from, and you can put in a really great amount of emotion into the performance, and these stories, you know, that great songwriters write about are relatable. And, you know, behind this tune, there's no lyrics, but I think it's kind of a relatable situation. The songwriters, they'll write about a breakup, but, you know, when it's performed enough, it can become anybody's breakup, you know? Jazz can be, detached from direct meaning. Jazz can be music about music about, then that means music about groove, music about improvisation, music about, you know, virtuosity and musical heights and harmony. But I think it helps to have a underlying message when composing, because it's something that an audience member can relate to.
Let's have a look at your bandmates, Evan Hyde and Jeff Saunders.
Yeah. Evan, I've known for years. He's from Grand Rapids originally. He went to Western Michigan University when I was taking some classes there in high school. We were talking. I was like, why don't we play some music that's, you know, we don't hear very often. So we took on covers by The Bad Plus and Avishai Cohen and just people who were like a little bit outside
stuff.
Actually really challenging, but I think that's what you're alluding to. But stuff that's just like it's not quite traditional jazz. It lies right outside of that, but is still, you know, linked to improvisation and jazz. And so it was a lot of fun taking on those projects. And then he ended up coming down for a master's degree at University of Miami and moved in with me, and we said, you know, we got to have a band together down here. And, you know, we were thinking, who could we have as part of this? And my first thought was Jeff Saunders, who's a really incredible bass player and really incredible person. He was doing his master's at the time. Now he's doing his doctoral degree down there at University of Miami. It made a lot of sense. Both Evan and Jeff play in the Terrence Blanchard Ensemble, in which they get together every week and rehearse, and the great trumpeter and composer Terrence Blanchard comes every other month and coaches them and gives them assignments and such. So they're already playing a lot. So, you know, we brought this group together, you know, since I'm connected to Evan, Evan's connected to Jeff, and now we're all connected through this project.
The tunes we're listening to, where were they recorded, and when did you have that session?
You know, they were all recorded at various times last school year, at the University of Miami. They have a really wonderful studio there, and they have a really, really great music engineering program. And that produces some incredible student engineers. And this engineer that we used, Jackson Furlick, is kind of a prodigy in this area. I really respect him a lot. I mean, this guy has a side project where he writes all his own songs, plays all the instruments, records them all, mixes, masters it, and does the album artwork, you know, just the whole package. We're just at school, and he can make us sound, you know, incredible. So I'm a huge fan of his.
Good circumstance there.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you introduce this Frank Lesser tune you grabbed?
This is a tune that I love. You know, it's classic, you know, Miles Davis rendition of, you know, If I Were a Bell. This is the opener for the album. It's a fun, kind of bright swing tune, and we've got our own little take on it. So, hope you enjoy. ¶¶
Wow, that's a lot of fun, Gene.
Oh, thank you.
An amazing track with your trio, which includes Evan Hyde on drums, sounding like really energetic there. And Jeff Saunders on bass. And of course, you are the keyboardist. And Gene, you're going to be playing this Sunday at 4 o'clock in Bronson Park.
That's right.
Your professional debut here in Kalamazoo, returning after college in Miami.
So excited to be having the opportunity to do this. And a really big thank you to Fontana and David Baldwin for seeing promise in me to put me up like this. It's really, really incredible. Really incredible support.
The experience of playing for live audiences mm-hmm. can be up, it can be down.
Yeah.
But there's a magic there. And
yeah.
You gotta feel it.
Yeah, yeah. So this group and I and whenever I play, try and put as much energy into the performance as possible. If you see me up there, I'm not exactly sitting still. I get really excited, and I think audiences connect to, you know, this kind of emotional investment expression that I'm putting physically and in addition musically into the music. And also I try to choose repertoire that is, you know, interesting to me. Not just something I like to play, but is interesting and maybe a little different. We have this kind of jazz, but not repertoire, kind of an eclectic repertoire. Mm-hmm. And I'm really interested in getting people maybe to hear music that they wouldn't normally hear.
Well, you're leading us directly to what might be called the centerpiece of the album. Certainly the most extensive piece, and
yeah.
Of all people, it's by the French late 19th century composer Gabriel Fauré.
Yeah, this is his Requiem in D minor, which there's so many incredible movements in this work, and it was hard to choose, but the first movement really grabbed me, you know, when I first heard this piece, you know. I had this amazing professor at University of Miami named Frank Cooper. If you don't know him, you should, because he's one of the greatest musicologists in the world. I would dare to say he knows the history of music back and forth. He can talk so intellectually about the life of Beethoven, Mozart, but then way back to you know, Gabrielli and Ford, as far as, you know, Schoenberg, just fluidly with more insight than most people who play that music. He's just one of those great professors who's really just studied and also known a lot of the performers of this music. You know, he was telling me about how he met and worked with and interviewed, you know, a pianist who premiered one of Ravel's works, you know, back in the early 20th century, and just he won an award alongside Horowitz at one point. It's just, but it's not, he's not a household name, you know, but he should be. Anyways, I was lucky enough to take a class with him about Impressionism and music in Paris around the turn 19th to 20th century. And just really inspired by that whole scene. I've always loved that music, but I got to learn so much more about it. And also about how those composers, Debussy, Ravel, Fauré, were hanging out with, you know, painters Picasso and Braque, who were hanging out with photographer Man Ray. You know, just the list goes on and on. Big creative pool. And that inspired me for many things. One, to find work with other artists. I've been collaborating with a group of artists, which I call the Artist Collective Project, which has a painter, a photographer, a writer, poet, and a filmmaker, and we all, you know, take on projects together, one of which is a documentary that will be coming out at the end of this summer. So I spent a long time trying to figure out what to do with that, because, you know, the Requiem is for a full choir and orchestra, you know, and I don't have that, you know, at my disposal, you know, if I'm, so I bought the score and learned, you know, the organ part, started to break it down into a chart that the rest of the band could read. And we kind of hacked away at it until we came up with a way of presenting it with piano and bass and drums and to improvise on it. And, you know, there's such a rich connection between the impressionism, you know, the harmony and the ideas, the musical ideas and, you know, what became of jazz. So it's been a really exciting project. So, I hope you enjoy this first movement of Gabriel Fauré's Requiem in D minor.
Well, you might call it the sad heart of the album here, Gene. That is a really intricate and lovely transcription, reworking of Fauré's Requiem, the opening movement. And if you just tuned in, I'm talking to Gene Kinnifick, who is making his professional Kalamazoo debut on Sunday at Bronson Park with his trio. Gene Kinnifick, of course, grew up here in Kalamazoo, a son of Renata and Tom Kinnifick. And your brother John also is a professional player and much more. I believe he's a sort of an entrepreneur as well.
Yeah, he's the CEO of DecisionDesk.com, which is a website that hosts auditions for music schools and anything. Anybody who would need video auditions can use his website to host the uploads of video, music, resumes, whatever. It all goes into one place for the people who are, judging the application. And it's been super successful. He's got a lot of great schools are signed on to him. University of Michigan, DePaul, Manhattan School of Music, New England Conservatory, University of Miami, you know, where I just graduated from. I know Disney just signed on because they use they get like over 20,000 video applications a year. So,
yeah, I had to think about it a little bit. Like, he made a website for auditions, but I realized it's a genius idea because it was so very needed.
Yeah.
I mean, and to have a platform that evens out the everything to do with auditions.
Exactly. Yeah, it's really convenient. I mean, he knew from talking to his music professors and my parents, you know, who just get piles of DVDs or CDs, you know, with just like, you know, John Doe's audition, and then, you know, everybody, all the faculty would have to get together and spend hours, you know, listening to each one and judging it. Now everybody can do it from their home, from their computer, and it's just streamlined and really convenient. So I applaud him for a really amazing idea.
I guess, lastly, I hear that you're back in Michigan for a while.
Yes, I just moved back from Miami. I'm relocated to Kalamazoo. Right now I'm working and saving money until I make my next move. I'm hopefully going to be applying for grad school the next year or two and make some other move. But right now I'm in Kalamazoo and super happy to be home and performing here.
Watch out. You may be too valuable to let go of. That tends to happen. Musical community really starts to rely on its strongest players. And you could certainly be that.
Well, that would be wonderful.
I wish you all the best. And
thank you.
It's really great to connect. And I look forward to our next session.
Yeah.
I have a little treat for you for the end of this hour that will play us out. This comes from an album by a flute player, jazz flute player named Hubert Laws.
Mm-hmm.
And he also loved the music of Fauré. And so he got some friends together, Bob James on piano.
Yeah.
Ron Carter, bass, Jack DeJohnette.
Wow, I don't know this at all.
And a certain Gene Bertoncini on guitar.
Oh, no way!
Who I believe is your namesake.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, well, let's listen to the Pavane by Gabriel Fauré.
Wonderful.